हरि सहनौ भुनक्षु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्वी नावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila chapter 8, talks between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai. Okay. It is stated in the Hari Bhakti Vilas that one should not accept initiation from a person who is not in the Brahminical order, if there is a fit person in the Brahminical order present. So in other words, someone that you could take from, that would be a proper connection, you wouldn't take from someone else, you'd always take from them first. That's the recommendation. This instruction is meant for those who are overly dependent on the mundane social order, and is suitable for those who want to remain in mundane life. So in other words, those who are worried about their social positions and this and that takes a prominence. Right? So in other words, it's a very neophyte position. But if that's the position, then this is what you should do, because you should never doubt your guru. Right? And then if at some point, because of your attachment to the material consideration, if you consider something's wrong because your guru's not a Brahmin, then better you don't do that. Better you take initiation from a Brahmin, and then you can't make that complaint. You may have other complaints, but you can't have that one. So they're trying to save you from that. So that's the point, because it's not that only the Brahmin can be the better guru, but in your mind, only the Brahmin can be the better guru, and you might make offense. But as said before, Krishna, who knows Krishna, their guru. That's the whole point. That's like, it was that pastime, I think, when Lord Chaitanya, you know, first was overwhelmed with the holy name, and he was in the toilet, and he started chanting in the toilet. So when he comes out of the toilet, then he's holding his tongue with his left hand, so he won't chant. Because the rule is like you can't chant Vedic mantras in that. And when he comes out, there's this little 8-year-old kid there. You know, they're moving around, so he says, you know, kind of, what's going on here? You know, and he told him that, you know, chanting and this and that. And he says, don't you know the holy name is above all these rules? You can chant anywhere. It's not controlled by these rules like the Vedic mantras are. You don't chant Vedic mantras in the toilet. You know? So then, because of this instruction and all that, then he's known as Gopal Guru. You know, and so he, Lord Chaitanya is having a guru in the instructions of the holy name. He's an 8-year-old kid. Right? But, so that's the point. If one understands the truth of Krishna consciousness and seriously desires to attain transcendental knowledge for the perfection of life, he can accept a spiritual master from any social status, provided the spiritual master is fully conversant in the science of Krishna. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also states that although one is situated as a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, brahmachari, vanaprastha, grihastha, or sannyasi, if he is conversant in the science of Krishna, he becomes a spiritual master as Vartma Pradarsha Guru, Diksha Guru, or Siksha Guru. The spiritual master who first gives information about spiritual life is called the Vartma Pradarsha Guru. The spiritual master who initiates according to the regulations of the Shastra is called the Diksha Guru. And the spiritual master who gives instructions for elevation is called the Siksha Guru. Factually, the qualifications of a spiritual master depend on his knowledge of the science of Krishna. does not matter whether he's a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Sannyasi, or Shudra. This injunction given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not at all against the injunctions of the Shastra. In the Padma Puran, it is stated, Na Shudra Bhagavad Bhaktaste Pi Bhagavan Bhagavadottama Sarva Varneshu Te Shudra Yena Bhakta Janardane. One who has actually advanced the spiritual life of Krishna is never a Shudra, even though he may have been born in a Shudra family. However, even a Vipra or Brahman is very expert in the six brahminical activities, patana, yajana, yajana, dana, pratigaha, is also well versed in the Vedic hymns, he cannot become a spiritual master unless he is a Vaishnava. But if one is born in the family of Chandalas, yet is well versed in Krishna consciousness, he can become a guru. These are the Shastric injunctions, and strictly following these injunctions, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as a Grihastha named Sri Vishrambara, was initiated by a sannyasi guru named Ishwara Puri. Similarly, Sri Nityananda Prabhu was initiated by Madhavendra Puri, a sannyasi. According to others, however, he was initiated by Lakshmipati Tirtha. Advaitacharya, although a Grihastha, was initiated by Madhavendra Puri. And Sri Rasikananda, although born in a Brahmin family, was initiated by Sri Shyamananda Prabhu, who was not born in a caste Brahmin family. There are many instances in which a born Brahmana took initiation from a person who was not born in a Brahmana family. The brahminical symptoms are explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam 7.11.35, wherein it is stated, Yasya yau lakshanam proktam pumso varna bhi vyanjakam yad antyatrapi drishyeta tad tenaiva vinir dishet. If a person is born in a Shudra family, but has all the qualities of a spiritual master, he should be accepted not only as a Brahmana, but as a qualified spiritual master also. This is also the instruction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur therefore introduced the sacred thread ceremony for all Vaishnavas according to the rules and regulations. Right? So this will come up, we'll come back to this, because then this point is, maybe not. Sometimes a Vaishnava who's a Bhajananandi does not take the Savitri Samskar, means the Upanayanam, sacred thread ceremony. But this does not mean that this system should be used for preaching work. Right? So, the Bhajananandis, they wouldn't necessarily go through these things. So unless in their family tradition they would take the Savitri initiation, then they wouldn't. They would just take the Pancharatrik initiation. Right? Because the Savitri means debated. And so, you know, they would wear the threads, and those who didn't, wouldn't. But with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because he wants to establish this point very clearly, that a qualified devotee is automatically a Brahmana. Right? Therefore, he introduced the sacred thread ceremony for all Vaishnavas according to rules and regulations. Right? So that's the principle. And so then Srila Prabhupada then introduced the same for also the women. So the principle is that therefore, that's how it works, because it's established. Does that make sense? Yeah, so we see is that they didn't before because it's not important. They don't have to establish themselves as a Brahmin. They're just Bhajananandis. You know, what's the point? But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur for the preaching then introduced. Because it's not against the Shastra, because the conclusion is that the Vaishnava is automatically a Brahmin. Qualified Brahmin. And so in this way, then it works. That's the principle. So in the preaching, then, you don't necessarily go with that. There are two kinds of Vaishnavas, Bhajanandi and Gostyanandi. A Bhajanandi is not interested in preaching work, but a Gostyanandi is interested in spreading Krishna consciousness to benefit the people and increase the number of Vaishnavas. A Vaishnava is understood to be above the position of a Brahmana. As a preacher, he should be recognized as a Brahmana. Otherwise, there may be misunderstanding of his position as a Vaishnava. Right? Because you can't say, oh, he's a Shudra, and then this. So that's why also you see is in the Varnashram for us, it's just that we know the positions and how to perform the duties in that position. But there's no identity as such. You know, it's just like, we're giving an example. You look a very, I say, refreshed. Huh? Yeah, no, it's amazing, this tailoring work, how they make things look transparent when they're... You brought your own AC with you. Okay. You know, just like you say, remember one instance where there's head pujari at the temple. And he does puja and all that all day. But at the same time is, because he was a grihastha, I think the temple didn't have any facilities and all that. So he lived outside. So then, you know, X amount of days a week, like on weekends or something like that, he would work at the local grocery store. And he was just one of the checkers. You know, you collect your stuff, you bring it to them, and they do everything and charge you. You know, so obviously it's a Shudra job. But it doesn't make him a Shudra, but it means that at that job, he acts the duties of a Shudra. And so the boss tells him do this, and he has his managers, and now he listens. He doesn't go, hey, I'm a Brahmin, you can't tell me what to do. Does that make sense? But the point is it doesn't have. So that's the whole thing of the Daiva Varnashram, is that there's no need for an identity. So that's sometimes the things, oh, we have to classify and identify. No, we have to train devotees that they know how to identify what their own position is, so that they know how to act in that position. But it's not that, oh, he's classified as Shudra, so then he can only do this and that and so many things. So that's the difference, is we use the system because it's the best system, but we only use it as far as it's useful in pure devotion. That was sudden. Oh, back. Oh, must have been the wind. Does that make sense? So some push for Varnashram, you have to designate everything, and others are, no, we're not this body, we don't designate anything. So that means that socially no one acts in that way, and individually they don't know who they are. So then it makes it weak. How do you function? How do you know what your strengths and weaknesses are? How do you know how to function?
If you don't identify as servant of Krishna, automatically you are going to...
Yes, then these things come up. Yeah. So those who don't identify like that, even if they don't identify in these areas, they don't want to talk about it either, because they don't want to be designated as something lower than they hear. But if you talk to people who actually deal with social structuring and everything, they understand it. You know, it's just because that's the way it is. You know, each group has their particular mentality, their particular goals, you know, and so that has to be balanced. Otherwise, you won't get a proper social structure. Okay. So, as a preacher, he should be recognized as a Brahmana. Otherwise, there may be misunderstanding of his position as a Vaishnava. However, a Vaishnava Brahmana is not selected on the basis of his birth, but according to his qualities. Right? So, even if parents are, therefore, Vaishnavas or Brahmins, but it's not selected because of the birth. It's that you have those devotional qualities also. Unfortunately, those who are unintelligent do not know the difference between a Brahmana and a Vaishnava. They are under the impression that lest one is a Brahmana, he cannot be a spiritual master. For this reason only, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu makes the statement in this verse, Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 8, 128. What are we on now? Huh? Oh, it's this one. Okay. Kiva Vipra Kiva Nyasi Shudra Kene Noi Jai Krishna Tattva Veta Se Guru Hoy. If one becomes a guru, he is automatically a brahmana. Sometimes the caste guru says that Yay Krishna Tattva Veta Se Guru Hoy means that one who is not a brahman may become a Siksu guru or a Vartma Pradarsha guru, but not an initiated guru. So they try to adjust it. Right? According to such caste gurus, right, that means the caste Goswamis, the Jat Goswamis. Birth and family ties are considered foremost. Because for them, if you're born in that family, that's what you are. So they don't understand. However, the hereditary consideration is not acceptable to Vaishnavas. The word guru is equally applicable to the Vartma Pradarsha guru, Siksha guru, and Diksha guru. Here's the point, equally. So then according to one's position, that's what one's doing. But it doesn't, see, they're taking it and it means Diksha guru, that's guru. And then these others are kind of like, you know, side things that, yes, those who are less qualified, they've been counted that way. But here, is the point is no, the three are the same. So the point is the Siksha Guru has the same standing. The Vartma Pradarsha who connects you has that standing. But, you know, there's a etiquette between them. But still. Unless we accept the principle enunciated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this Krishna consciousness movement cannot spread all over the world. According to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's intentions, Prithivi te ache jato nagaradi gram sarvatara prachar hoibe mor nam. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult must be preached all over the world. This does not mean that people should take to his teachings and remain shudras or chandalas. Right? It means you take to the teachings and then you follow the teachings. So naturally then you're going to be living that devotional lifestyle. You know, because Brahman is the ashram, how he lives his ashram. Because ashram is the brahminical aspect. And then there is also the aspect of, you can have an occupation as a Brahman. So in other words, a brahmachari, the vanaprastha sannyas, those are automatically brahminical positions. As grihastha, then he also may be doing brahminical occupational duty. Because technically, Brahman Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra is for grihasthas. Because they're the ones that do. Because a brahmachari, even if he's a kshatriya, they still do the same things as the Brahmins, as the Vaishyas. They all do the same work. Otherwise, how is it Krishna and Sudama Vipra are doing the same thing? They're both stuck out in the forest together. Right? So, yes, you know that the mentalities, but it's not, but they still are only doing brahminical activity. And so you might instruct them differently, or might, you know, the examples you'd use are different. You know, like we said before, preaching means you get through the individual, know the nature. So depending on the nature, you'll deal with it accordingly. Like that. Is that okay? Yeah. But it doesn't mean it changes the duties. As soon as one is trained as a pure Vaishnava, he must be accepted as a bona fide Brahmana. This is the essence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions in this verse. Reading it like it's a verse. I was going to go, Udriti, and what? Okay. If someone approaches the bona fide spiritual master with a vanity of mundane pride in respect to his heritage, heredity, wealth, education, or personal beauty, and without the necessary qualifications of surrender, service, and relevant inquiry, such a person will be honored outwardly by the spiritual master, but the spiritual master will decline to bestow transcendental knowledge upon the student, who, by his attitude of mundane vanity, is rendered unqualified. So, he might talk about some other technical points or that, or just be pleasant and nice, be respectful, but he won't be giving spiritual knowledge. Like we see is the same happened with, like we mentioned the story with Gotama's son. Because, you know, of his birth, you know, and his intelligence, his pride and everything, The teacher never taught him that. But Gotama knew, and all Gotama's associates knew. So as soon as they heard. And again, you also see, I think it's with Vishwamitra. He didn't know. Because his whole point of being a Brahmin, then it's not only he wants to be a Brahmin, then he's got to be a Brahma Rishi. Not even just he's a Rishi. No, he has to be a Brahma Rishi. It means he has to be declared that he's one of the sons of Brahma and has that status. Even though he's not. But because of his attitude in that, then okay, why not, you know. But then, who has to say it? That he is? Vishishta. He has to say, you know, respect him as a Brahma Rishi, you know, like that. So you can see it's, and so then when you had the discussion in Janaka's court, who, you know, he's one of the Mahajans, and you had, Gargi. I think it's Gargi. That's the example given in the Vedanta Sutra. As of an Uttama. That they were discussing what's the, you know, about who's the best, greatest scholar there. And so many people are this, and they're cross-questioning each other until it comes down to Vishwamitra. And so far, he knows things no one else knows. So they ask him everything from every fine detail, you know, in this Veda, and this Brahmana, and this section, you know, what is the, you know, difference between this spoon and that spoon, all these things. He knows everything. So no one else had any questions. And up to this point, Gargi didn't say anything. And so then he asked, okay, well, is there anything else? And so then at that point, then Gargi says, well, I can, you know, I have a question. And she started to ask about spiritual subject matter. He didn't know that it existed as a topic. So he got very insulted. You know, that, you know, you're asking questions that, you know, you're just saying something. You know, like this. And so as soon as she understood that, she immediately stood up and then announced him to be the greatest scholar and the winner of the whole thing and everything like that. So, how you say? You just don't tell people who are proud. You can't. Because you use it, they'll use it against you. They'll use it against themselves. They'll just make a mess of it. So it's just not. And the Vaishnavas, they go along with it. You know, she's a much greater, when it comes to, it means, of the sciences, of the material sciences, he's the greatest, but of spiritual science, he was zero. You know? And that, so she was way greater than him. She wouldn't be as great as Janaka Raja. He's a king. You know? And, you know, Gargi, she would be the, you know, Garga.
She's, I think, wife of Yajnavalkya.
Yajnavalkya, yeah. So she'd be a Brahmani. Or like that. And so then it's just, there's etiquette there. So therefore, Janaka Raja and Gargi, you know, great Vaishnavas, Uttam Vaishnavas, they're accepting, yes, he's the greatest scholar. Because who needs to be the greatest scholar? You know, it's overrated. Such a proud student is actually a Shudra, and he has no access to spiritual knowledge for one of the necessary qualifications mentioned above. Thus, the Shudra student, instead of availing himself to the mercy of the spiritual master, goes to hell as a result of his mundane vanity. Right, so this is where he's presenting, you know, I'm this, I'm that, you know, and so many things. Like yesterday, one person from a business background, you know, his family line is business. And the particular area where he's working, then it's an economic scene, but it's controlled by the government because they want to make sure that people in general have faith in it so they invest their money. So they regulate it that the actual board that runs the company is run by bureaucrats, not by the business people. And so because of that, their background there, and they can't be thrown out or anything because they're government appointed, and you know they're in there because they know they have all the contacts, they have all that. It's just the way it works. And so then they're very proud, and so they're telling guys that can do stuff that they couldn't dream of doing ever in their life, of making money, because as a government servant they just know how to manage things. They don't know, and maybe sometimes spend, they don't have no idea how to make money. Because if with that much brain, they knew how to make money, they'd be making money. They get paid so much more. Right? IAS. means they do okay. But that kind of brain, in money, you could make so much money, but they don't. But then they're telling people that know how to make, you know, thousands or tens of hundreds of thousands times more money than they could ever dream of. And then they're telling, oh, it's never good enough. It's never this. It's never that. They're just harassing. So that's the whole point, because that position of the IAS office, they're shrewders. Smart shrewders. They're shrewders. I mean, that's the government position. It's the same as Ramananda Rai. But Ramananda Rai, being a devotee, he doesn't have that pride. Well, these guys do. So when they come along like this, then you can't instruct them. You know? So the first ones were, not that they didn't have a brahminical qualification as far as the material position went, but because of their pride, they weren't qualified for spiritual knowledge. But here, these guys aren't qualified brahminically, or can they get to spiritual. So then, really bad position.
The teacher must discriminate.
Yes, the teacher must discriminate. But point is, since you're trying to bring everybody, up to the standard of being, you know, pure devotion, then you're trying various ways. So the discrimination is first is that how to bring them to that standard. But if they have this pride, like you said, you know, the heredity, wealth, education, personal beauty, because these are the four forms the karma, good karma gives you good facility, but bad karma doesn't. So these are exactly what they'll be proud of. And if they're proud of those things, they don't have the qualifications of surrender, they don't render service, they don't have the relevant inquiry. It's just about their pride. What's to work with? So you're pleasant, you're nice, but they won't get anywhere. Because whether they have these pieties or not, if they have these three, the tad vidhi prani patena padi prashnena sevai, they have these three of surrender, service, and relevant inquiry, they qualify. Right? So whether they come from a good background or not, it doesn't matter, because with that attitude, then the soul can learn about spiritual knowledge, since spiritual knowledge is the natural position of the soul. Right. So all these things, yeah, it's a delicate balance to see, because you see on one thing, it's one. Like you see two kinds of people unqualified for the spiritual knowledge, but one actually does have brahminical on the material platform. They're very qualified. And these other ones, they don't, even though they're super smart. You know? But at the same time, is that one who's, you know, in that position, is that like Ramananda Rai, but he's the most qualified. So Lord Chaitanya is accepting him as guru in this subject matter. Like that. So it's the whole point comes down to is the Krishna conscious aspect. It's not about the body, so that should be left out of it. You know, it's not like, oh, we're not the body, so then we can be guru. But the point is what's the qualification? Is the qualification there? That's what makes you the guru. Not because we're not the body. The dog's not the body also. You know, so now they're going to be guru? You know, probably if you went to one of these big, like, rainbow festivals and took a big dog and then announced that the Guruji, the dog, will be giving initiation and all that, and he's trained, and people can come and bow down and put his paw on their head or something like that, and then they'll all be in ecstasy. They've been initiated by the dog guru. Yeah, you could probably do pretty good. You know? So the whole point is this, it's, you know, then you go, he's a dog, we're not this body. Come on. So the whole point is you have to be very, very careful that the discrimination is in favor of a pure devotional service, as is given by the acharyas. Okay. That's the point. In the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, especially in this perverted age of Kali, the passage mentioned above, wherein it says it does not matter whether a person is a Brahmin, sannyasi, or shudra, is important. The qualification for a spiritual master is that he must be thoroughly conversant in the art and science of devotional service, right? So that's the qualification. This is revolutionary to the stereotype so-called spiritual mastership prevailed among the masses in India. The exploitive method is herein dealt a deadly blow, and this truth is established by the devout followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's conception. Right? So they don't go for these, you know, it's not like, I don't know if it still is in the West, but I remember back in the 60s, you know, Indian gurus, you know, they wore the white long flowy robes and long beard and long hair, you know, and they always, you know, spoke very softly and stuff like that and talk, you know, like this, you know, it was the stereotype. I don't know if it's still the same, but, you know.
Worse.
I mean, what's worse, the beard's longer or? So that means if they come from, if they just say they come from a family of that, then as soon as they start growing, you know, in puberty, they get hairs on their face and that. They never shave. They just, because they need a long beard before you can be a guru. So this way, if they just let it go, by the time the guy's, you know, 18, 20, he can be, you know, Jagat Guru and all that. You know, start early, right?
And the credit card.
The credit card.
You get a guru, you have to have a credit card.
Aha! Okay, yeah, that makes sense. The fact is that a person who is thoroughly conversant about Sri Krishna can become a spiritual master either as an initiator or an instructor. Does not matter whether such a person is a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. Nor does it matter whether he is a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, or sannyasi. The only qualification of a spiritual master is his knowledge of the truth about Sri Krishna. This qualification certainly does not rest on his particular situation in terms of the system of varna and ashram. According to Bhagavad Gita 18:42-44, a really qualified brahmana possesses 9 qualities. A Kshatriya, 7 qualities. A Vaishya, 3 qualities. And a Shudra, only 1 quality. So, wherever the particular qualities are found or developed, the person possessing these particular qualities should be regarded as such. Right? So that's in the performance of the duty. Accepting this formula from the scriptures, the Vaishnava accepts the spiritual master upon his becoming conversant in the knowledge of Sri Krishna. Right? So what occupational duties they do is by the qualities they have. Right? So wherever you're born from, if you show the qualities of Brahman, you're a Brahman. Or Kshatriya, whatever. It doesn't matter the background. Same way as if you have, you're conversant in the knowledge of Krishna, then that qualifies you there. Yeah.
Then Sri Prabhupada saying was the main Bhikshadu for the Krishna movement. After Prabhupada passed away, we began to Bhikshadu, the whole range of Bhikshadu. And now the thing is, we have too many Bhikshadu, we have to put emphasis on the Bhikshadu. Because most of the devotees actually get Bhikshadu from the bodies around them, and not really from the Bhikshadu. Even though Prabhupada said, first you have 10,000, then you have 1 million, you have 10 million. And you should have gurus everywhere.
Yes.
But the discussion that's going on right now is too much emphasis on the Bhikshadu, not enough on the Bhikshadu.
Yes, because there's always been Diksha gurus in the line, but the emphasis is not on that. So in other words, the important thing of Srila Prabhupada is not him being the bona fide Diksha guru, it's the siksha that he gives. Like that. Of course he's a bona fide. So everyone in the line, you know, then has a bona fide Diksha guru. But the emphasis we see is always on siksha, like the Chaitanya Charitamrita. then Prabhupada, writing the essence of it, wrote the five conversations. So it's all instruction. That's the important thing. And so everybody has so the line that we give in our parampara, that's the siksha line. But everybody there in that line has a diksha guru. You know, just like I think you have Narottam Das Thakur and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in diksha is the fourth generation after Narottam Das Thakur. Right? But he's the next in line as the siksha guru. So he's the acharya that establishes. But it's not that diksha line is not connected. So it may not be that they're all one diksha line. They're all connected, that they all go back to Lord Chaitanya. Like that. So that's the whole point, is that everybody has. But you see with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then they brought the two together. Because it just makes it more clear. It doesn't have to be, but it's brought together. So that you're overcoming the problem that you have diksha, like in the past Goswami, that the diksha may be properly connected, but where's the siksha? So they're called apasampradayas because they don't have proper siksha. We're not calling them apasampradayas because the diksha is bad. It's because the siksha is. And there can also be, I mean, we're not going into it to check which ones are this, that. But the point is, you know, that the diksha guru is giving you the mantras and they come down to the line. But it's the siksha, what you're going to do with them. That's the important point. So that's where our emphasis is. But everybody has a diksha guru. But the difficulty comes as neophytes tend to overemphasize the diksha guru. Because they don't as yet have faith in the Vaishnavas. That's a Madhyama thing. So when they have faith in the Vaishnavas, then it can be broader. Because they get, it's well meant in the sentiment of being that surrender to Guru and all that. It's well meant. And on one platform, that having that surrender is a good thing. But the problem comes up, the weakness comes, is that they don't respect others. So they may have some siksha gurus that they, and because of listening to them, they become fixed in their devotional service. Then they choose a diksha guru, and at that time, I don't know about nowadays, but before, 80s, 90s, and they would tend to drop all those siksha gurus, and now they've got their diksha guru, and they'll only hear from him and not. Then if anything happens, they're left with nothing. While it would be the siksha would have naturally just continued, and then there's that loss of the connection with the diksha.
Because the diksha
Yeah. The point is the diksha is that since we're conditioned, we require it to take it seriously. And so that system is there. And it will change because we don't necessarily take the siksha that seriously, it will change us to be qualified. You know, as I said, that example of the bell metal turning to gold. And so then you have that qualification, you still have to do something with it. So that's the siksha. So the siksha is most important. But if one's not liberated already, means on the Uttama platform, then you require Pancharatrik Diksha. And so even we see those who even are liberated, they still will go through the process because that's what everybody else is going to be doing. And so that just has to be appreciated. That the siksha is the most important thing. Because the Vartma Padarsha, how do they connect you? By siksha, they convince you of Krishna consciousness, that you get faith. So that's important. Right? And so, it's just the preliminary instance of siksha guru. Then, naturally, they would continue as a siksha guru. Or you may not see them again. And then others will be there. But the diksha has that position, and there is an etiquette there, of course. But because of the this neophyte consideration to consider the diksha guru, then the point is if you say we have to, it's a good point. It's not that you want to reduce the position of the diksha guru. You want to elevate the position of the siksha guru. We don't want to use the Western thing is that so you bring everybody else down, then it's equal, then everybody's great. No, you have to elevate that up. But how will that be done? It's by training only. There is no other method. But that means then there has to be a concerted effort to train people. And that doesn't mean a 10-day course. You know, you have the 10-day course so people have the knowledge. But if that's not ongoing, it's not that 10-day course is magic or something. It puts you in contact. Now you know the knowledge, you know the context and everything. That's very good. Someone did the research, worked it out. Nice. But if that's not the regular thing that's being spoken, then how will they actually in practice come to that mentality?
He's been coaching me my
life. Yeah, it's just the point is that somehow or another you're considered more intelligent, more of a free thinker if you think badly about everybody else. That makes you an individual. But, you know, it won't get you anywhere. Because that mentality will not be tolerated in the spiritual world. But you're rendering service associated with Vaishnavas, you're definitely going to get some benefit because you're not always critical. You know, if someone's always critical, then that's another thing. But that's the general concept, is that you're considered more liberal the more you're critical of everybody else. That would be like saying, he's the most charitable person because he never gives anything. So that's the mode of ignorance. It makes you not be able to understand what's happening. So unless there's training, education, like Prabhupada said, our centers are educational centers, not administrative centers. You know, they're the ones with the administrator, but they're supposed to be educational centers. So that means you have to have this course that you got to fly halfway around the world to go for 10 days for, and then why is it every temple's not training you in this? And every temple's, everybody knows this, everybody's teaching. You know, then, and the community, everything. That's, so the switch has to be to preaching rather than administration. You need administration, but you have to know what's prominent. Just like Diksha is being taken as the main instead of Siksha, administration is being taken as more important than training. Because, yes, you're preaching outside. Those who discuss this with the devotees and bring them up from the neophyte to the Madhya platform and on, that's more important. And you're just going to do that anyway because you're always going to be bringing in people. So if you're always preaching to the devotees, then you want to have more people coming in to be devotees to preach to. Like that. Because there's some place where Prabhupada is talking about the senior most devotees should be preaching to the devotees. The newer devotees can be preaching to outside. Right? Especially in the West. How much philosophy do you have to know? Like, they know nothing. So if you know 1%, you know, you're way better. Yeah, of course, because they're the ones that are there. They get into it. They're inspired, and they tell. So that's the whole point. Is that, you know, that was the whole idea. Yeah, is that okay? Something's there. Yeah, because the Madhyam platform, you accept Vaishnavas, you do like that. So that's what's of value. So the point is, remember at GBC meeting that they mentioned that why they were taking the particular policies they were, was that most devotees are neophytes. But then the problem is they left them that way. Instead of taking a position and a platform that was viable for Madhyamas, and then those Manyumas then would convince the neophytes and bring them up. You just disenfranchised the Manyumas because you treated them like neophytes, and then the neophytes thought they were great and stayed that way. So, you know, so that's the whole point is we're a Manyuma movement. People, yes, are neophytes, they are Uttamas, but everybody acts as a Manyuma. Right? Means that the neophyte doesn't know much, but he goes out and preaches like a Madhyama. The Uttama, then that he comes down and acts in that capacity of Madhyama. That's what we are. That's the movement. You know, in the way of So that's the platform you function from. Steady devotional service. But you can accommodate those who aren't. But the idea is to bring them to the steady platform, not placate them where they are and it's all right, you stay there. Oh, no, you don't have to do anything. I mean, Prabhupada's point is to start Krishna conscious, you don't have to change your position. But as he points out is, having taken up Krishna consciousness, you don't stay as a chandala or as, you act as a Vaishnava, so then you're a Brahmin. So this is that, no, they can stay that way, we don't want to change their external. But unless you change the internal, then, what's the point? Because especially if you're going to the yoga studio, you're not talking about philosophy, you're not getting paid, what's the point? You're putting in your time in that and not getting paid? Okay, you go in there, you're not getting paid, but you preach Krishna consciousness. Okay, that makes sense. That's another thing. Huh? Yeah. So it's weird. Because there's this idea that it's all right, you don't want to upset anybody and this and that. No, we're trying to give people Krishna consciousness. Yes.
It's a contemporary example from real life.
Okay.
One guru, super popular, decided not to give any more diksha because, too many disciples already, how many people you can actually care for. Then, after, some consideration, it took a few years, he thinks, okay, because so many people begging for the diksha, he thinks we'll develop this program of shiksha. So I put number of people, senior devotees that I trust, they're gonna represent me and they will be called not mentors, not babas, but actually shiksha gurus. And then if they introduce new people to me, I will give them diksha. Mm-hmm. But they will continue, guide those people.
Yes.
Do you think it's a good...
It's formalizing the normal thing that would go on. It's the normal thing that go on is you're in a temple, your guru comes through once a year. It's the siksha gurus that nourish. And you're inspired by the guru and what he said and anything like that. You're by that. So it's formalizing a more organic system.
So when it doesn't happen naturally, then it's kind of a good program.
Yeah, you could do that. But I'm saying it's... the interesting thing is that the... The first world, for all their bravado about how free-thinking and independent they are, they only function in structures. Until there's a structure, it's not real. But it's like here in Mayapur, you don't have to say any of that and everybody knows. It's just understood. So if you formalize, it's all right, but it shouldn't be made that it's the structure, because it may work for his people in his zone, but somewhere else it may not work. So it shouldn't be, and that's why Prabhupada didn't want centralization. You have the core, the central, the philosophy, the attitude, all that, but the particular technique that's going to be unique. One temple, they may get more into kirtan, another one into sankirtan, another one into the deity worship, another, you know, all different combinations. But if you say everybody has to be doing exactly the same thing, you know, because we're Westerners and we're democratic and we're free thinking, then something's wrong here, you know. So it can work. But that, you know, he should be seeing also himself is that, you know, he's hearing their speaking, he's seeing how others are doing, how they're developing, and stuff like that. And if he finds that the siksha's going well, then that's good. If not, then he can put more effort into those siksha gurus. As Ramanujacharya, before he left, he made 74 gurus. Like that. So he'd be watching how, because he wanted to watch how they were doing. Like that. You know, so Prabhupada, you know, similarly followed in the same kind of pattern. So it's not a new thing. They're thinking, oh, Prabhupada does whatever he wants. He's a chari. He never does just whatever he wants. He does what's traditional. You know? So you could do that. It's making it a little more formal, but at least it introduces that siksha gurus are okay.
Yes, his idea actually is like an experiment. He wants to show to the greater community of devotees that siksha is what you people need. It's not, don't look at me all the time. These people are qualified and they can actually help you.
Yeah, because the point is siksha means you give instruction. But what is wanted nowadays in the name of relationship with the Diksha Guru is what either my father, husband, brother, you know, son, a grandfather would do, or, you know, local pastor, then that's what the Diksha Guru has to do. So in other words, he has to take care of all your emotions and family things and this and that. And, you know, oh, you know, today I thought, you know, maybe I'd get up early and chant. Is that all right? You know, yeah, I mean, the point is whatever you do to that. Oh, but, you know, I felt a little tired today, so I didn't chant. So is that all right? You know, they have every day. But that's not what a Diksha Guru is for. It's not about an emotional relationship. It's about connecting to Krishna, and then the siksha is there. And so you take that advantage of the siksha from who's there locally, you know. Or nowadays you can even get online. You can get, you know, it's just, it's fine, you know. It's like, do that, and like in, I think it's Chopati, they maintain that desire tree. So they have, you know, lectures from, you know, so many different sources. And so you can take advantage of all these things. But the point is, follow Prabhupada's instructions, become a pure devotee. That's the thing. So if it can be done, and it works, and it doesn't turn into a trip, then yeah. And if it starts to go that way, then you have to preach and correct it. You know, because ultimately, any senior devotees that they're preaching to and like that, they're accepted as siksha gurus. But it also has to be understood is that there's three levels, right? Haridas Thakur explains this in his conversation to Lord Chaitanya, where Lord Chaitanya is taking the junior position and Haridas Thakur is doing all the talking. So Haridas Thakur says exactly what Ramananda Rai says. He says that I know nothing, but I'm just speaking the way you make me speak. It means you're the Lord, you know everything, you want to discuss these things, and you're making me speak in this way, and that's how I can speak so wonderfully. So in there, he explains when he's talking about the third offense, because it was all about the 10 offenses of the holy name, the glories of the name and the 10 offenses. And so then when he was talking about the spiritual master, he mentions that there's three levels of siksha guru. He didn't say three levels of diksha guru, he said siksha guru. The first is the adi guru, right? So for us, that's Srila Prabhupada. Then you have the sadguru, which will be, Diksha Guru is always a Sadguru, but there are Siksha Gurus that can be seen on that level. Then the third is the preachers. So in this is that you can't formalize that these are Sadguru, Siksha Gurus. That's over the top. But you can say these are Siksha Gurus, and so they're preachers. And then if you're going to have so many preachers and so many like that, so not only the designated person that's in the area, but any other person who comes through, they're on that platform. Now, if they happen to, you see them on the same level, that eternal kind of relationship, like the spirit, Diksha Guru, that's fine. But it's personal. Just like now in the society, one devotee's Diksha Guru is another devotee's, preacher, in the third level. You can't say it's because he's on the second level Sadguru of me, he should be on that with everybody. We've seen devotees try that before, it's failed miserably. The point is that, that's for you. And then someone else's is, they're Siksha Guru on the Sadguru level. But, to another person, they're on the third level. So that's the whole point, is that one has to understand this and be able to adjust to this, and function in this, and then things like that can work. Because you can't rubber stamp. He's saying that these are senior devotees that, how they preach and they discuss and that, then the guru has found that they do very well and all that, but you can't say that they have to be a sadguru for you, even in the level of siksha. They're like this, and it's individual. Does that make sense? It's just like you say you can't rubber stamp guru. It says, for the individual, but the community Vaishnavas would go, we trust that this devotee has the qualities and standards and that can maintain, the standards of the mission, so we feel comfortable with him being a Diksha Guru. But saying that he has to be your guru, like before it was everybody in the zone has to take initiation from this guru, that you don't need to do. Because generally someone preaches in a certain area, the people in that area like him. Why is he successful there? Because he can relate with those people. So naturally they'll take shelter. But as it is in anywhere, because there's individuality, you're always going to have somebody that it's about something else, someone else. So yes, they are a Siksha Guru for them, but they're Diksha Gurus from somewhere else. And so when that wasn't allowed to happen, that created so much problem. If Siksha Guru was understood then, you wouldn't have all this problem now. So as Prabhu said, the problem is not understanding what is Siksha Guru. You can say someone's qualified to function in that way, but it's anybody. Your parents can be Siksha Guru and all that. But what you have to see is that you do have the class of Siksha Gurus on the same level like your Diksha Guru, but you also have the class that's below that, that's just a senior person, a preacher. So you have to be very careful about that also, because you can't say that he's the Siksha Guru on the Sadguru platform for everybody, just like you can't say this is the Diksha Guru for anybody, so why can you say he's the Siksha Guru for everybody? But as a preacher, you can say he's a senior man, you should respect him, you should listen to him. That you can do. So it'll work as long as it's these points are considered. Then it can work, why not?
Because the first time we have a nurse, after the delivery, we have a nurse with power to kill it. The Sadguru is after the Adiguru.
Yes.
You said Adiguru is our partner.
Yes.
So actually the Sadguru is like the most inspiring person after the power partner.
The Adiguru is anyway that.
Yes,
but the point is that you're hearing from him, but the point is Siksha is not controlled by time and space. So we don't want to use Diksha Guru considerations and say, oh, he's the senior Siksha Guru and everybody else is a nonsense. Because that's how we got ourselves into this predicament in the first place. Is, Prabhupada's the guru, everybody else is a schmutz. And because I'm initiated by Prabhupada, therefore I'm fabulous. And you guys are just, sorry to say, just unfortunate, what to do. So this is, it all starts from here. is because the point is this, what about the siksha? Oh, it's all Prabhupada, 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 knowing this, knowing that. But what about Prabhupada's instructions? Follow that. You know? But it's, oh, but this modern thing here and this modern thing there and this intellectual won't like it and that, you know, that academic won't like it and, you know, like that. So where's Prabhupada as the siksha guru? So therefore, Prabhupada's valuable because he's a diksha guru. And he's old, he died, and he's not going to fall down. You know? It's so sad. The point is Adi Guru means that his instructions are the ones you follow. Like when it talks about Prabhupada as the, you know, the founder of Acharya, this point is not the one that's brought out. You know, they're saying he's special and unique and all that, but they're kind of proving that their Diksha Guru is special. But the point is, as Ramanujacharya is for his line, Madhvacharya for his, Nimbarka Vishnuswami, Srila Prabhupada is for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And it's not, oh no, that's just ISKCON. No, that's just the Gaudiya Vaishnava. Like it or not. Did Gaudiya Math ever make one devotee outside of this place right here in their life? Outside of India, outside any of their area, without using the system that Srila Prabhupada used. Without using his devotees who were trained by him. Anybody honest will say that's how it works. So we're not just saying because this guy, he's the one that's come to do. Because you can understand what the others are saying if you understand what Prabhupada's saying. Right? You know, that's why we say, that's why we study the two together. And you see. That's what's going on. So he's the Adi Guru. He's like that. So all instructions have to be in line with him. Your instructions are in line with him. You're a bona fide guru. If they're not, you're not bona fide. You know? That's just the way it is. So it's not because he's the Diksha Guru. It's because he's the Adi Guru. And he's the first one there. He does initiate people at his point. But the point is that the Adi Guru, it's always going to be, you have connection with your guru and with Prabhupada. Right? So now it's, you know, it's now it's, okay, my guru is disciple of Prabhupada. But then after 100 generations, it'll be your guru and Prabhupada. If you go to the Sri's and that, they'll talk about, you know, they'll just talk about Ramanujacharya. They won't talk about anything else. You go to a Sri, they will not talk about anything else. But if you ask them who's your guru, then they'll stop and very reverentially mention the particular name of their Diksha Guru. So the point is for us, it's just Prabhupada's instructions. And that will be the way it'll be. And so relevant instruction means you're telling the individual, you're giving them to them, revealing Prabhupada's instructions in a relevant way, making them Prabhupada's instructions relevant for that individual. Right? So different people, you're going to be dealing in a different way. But it's Prabhupada's instructions that you're making relevant. So we are gurus as making Prabhupada's instructions relevant. We're not gurus on our own. You can try it, you can go out and do it, and then, you know, like that. You know, so many come and go. You know? The point this is what makes you relevant. And if you're connected, you're connected. That's why someone can be out of the movement for 20, 30 years. The day they walk in with that attitude to do service, they're right back where they were. People don't like that. Bureaucracy hates that. But the point is the same power is there. You're connected. You plug it in, it works. You unplug it, it doesn't work. It's not that, oh no, it can be never plugged in again. That's for those who follow eternal damnation. You know? But if you're following the Vedas, the soul is eternal. The soul is liberated. So, like that, then you can get into all kinds of things. But the point is one has to appreciate what is, if we understand how Prabhupada is Siksha Guru, all we have to do is represent his teaching. But if Prabhupada is just a Diksha Guru, then that means everybody else is going to be. But if Prabhupada is seen as the Siksha Guru, then Siksha Gurus will be. So that's the point is the first point to establish if you want to change the mood is change the mood of Prabhupada's disciples, that he's not just a Diksha Guru, he's the Siksha Guru. I mean, and not just because he's your guru, because he's the founder Acharya. I've seen books where founder Acharya is in small letters. Small letters, not capital founder Acharya. They just think, yeah, he's the guy that started ISKCON. No, he's the one, he's Lord Chaitanya's founder Acharya. The other Sampradayas, they have their founder Acharyas. And then within the Gaudiyas, he's our one. And he will be for the next 10,000 years. So one has to understand. Very fortunate to be so close. But the point is distance is not what's important. Like we said, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, four generations later. But he took Narottam Das Thakur's instructions, you know, as his life and soul. Therefore, that's the connection. So it's a very important subject matter, but it starts there. Because you always see it's because they're Prabhupada disciples, that's what makes us superior, rather than just, yes, they're the generation before. Just like the generation now will be senior to the next generation. But, you know, it becomes like a caste guru thing. You know, you can't underestimate the specialness of being a disciple of Prabhupada, but at the same time, is that's not the claim to fame. So one has to be able to balance these things. Because when Prabhupada is seen as the founder of Acharya, then you'll be able to establish Siksha Guru. Because it's just that connection is important. What about the instructor? What about Varnashram? We have our way of using it as Daiva Varnashram. Prabhupada's trying to institute it in 75 before they're talking about it, and then they got serious about it. And what's going on? So many things. He wanted all these courses to be established. Where is it going on? But organizing the world as administration, oh, there's great strides forward in that. But as a real administration or as a bureaucracy, which Prabhupada talked against. So how is it about Prabhupada's instruction? Right? So these are very generic talks that I'm saying. And each individual, you know, it has to be judged on their own. But I'm saying because there's these general flavors, therefore it trickles down. Whatever the top does, everybody else does. You know, you have a rule that Prabhupada's Vyasa son has to be that anybody else's where they sit, their head is no higher than Prabhupada's heart. They've actually spent time to discuss that. I'm sure not someone just said, hey, what about this? And they all said, yeah, great. And it was over in 30 seconds. They probably had a committee that discussed for days. You know? And that's what makes Prabhupada special? Everyone sits lower than him? Or he's Prabhupada, where all the other masters sit at his feet. No, everybody else is not a master. They're all nonsenses. And that Prabhupada's the only real master. But how is he Prabhupada if there's no masters? And what's so special about him if he didn't make any masters? No, but then all the Prabhupada's disciples are masters. No, what about the individual? So you say none, but nobody else is? You know, they have to wake up. Is that these next generation? When was 77? Right? How many? 43 years. So there's been devotees been in the movement 43 years. And how many years were they in before 47? Right? Maximum 11 years. So this is more than four times that. I mean, you can't underestimate the association of a pure Vaishnava like that. These those who were personally with Prabhupada. Everybody else is like that, maybe. I never got close. You weren't allowed to. You know? One time I was there in Mayapur, a festival, first time I came, and I saw Prabhupada there, you know the Lotus Building rooms. You know, they have the door at each end. So you can see right through. Prabhupada was on the other side. I was walking by. I thought, oh, hey, I'm going to go, you know, like that. I was stopped at the door. You can't go and talk. You can't go and talk to Prabhupada. I said, okay. So it's just, I thought that's the rule. So I never even tried again. You know? So it's, the tradition has to be accepted. You can't reject a tradition and accept, you know, modern stuff instead, modern social platitudes instead, and think we'll establish something great. So that's the point. 43 years, they haven't done anything? So why are they so much more important? At least every Prabhupada's disciple has done light years more than any of these people. In that 11 years, they did more than these people have done in the last 43. You know? And some have stayed, so it's 43 plus 11. You know? Then, yeah, you got to give it to them. But the whole one who has to properly see the balance of what is culture, what is the tradition, how are things done? Like that. So it's not just, you know, it means this is good. There has to be the emphasis on the siksha, but it has to be seen in its cultural context. What that means. What are siksha gurus? What are the various kinds? You know, what's Prabhupada? How everything, all siksha gurus and diksha gurus have to be based on what Prabhupada says. They have their own idea, then how are they bona fide? Just like here, bona fide. He knows Krishna, then he's a bona fide guru. You have to know Krishna, how Prabhupada's given us Krishna. You know, they want to have their own idea, then, you know, who cares? Is that all right? It is. It's a huge topic, but it's actually a very simple topic. It's made complicated. So it becomes as big as you make it. You know, Krishna is the biggest, but at the same time so easily approachable. You know, you just chant. You know, like that. Follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, and it works. So that's the point. As Prabhupada said, it's very simple, but very sublime. You know, and very sophisticated. So one has to use something other than a bureaucratic approach. You know, it's not, bureaucrats can be engaged and they're very important. They do very important work. But one always has to remember a bureaucrat is a shudra. That's sometimes forgotten. Bureaucrats are seen as professionals. So, in other words, professionals are great, Brahmins, who cares? But, okay. So, the qualities of a Brahmin appear naturally, and as such, a thoroughly conversant spiritual master cannot be anything but a qualified Brahmin. So, in other words, you know Krishna, then you're a qualified Brahmin. Right? You may know the rituals and the mantras or not, but the point is, Brahmana means one who knows Brahman, and we know the Supreme Brahman, which means the personality of Godhead. So that makes them a perfect Brahmin, a qualified Brahmin. And that's the qualification for being guru. 4.8, 129, 138. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "Please do not try to cheat me, thinking of me as a learned sannyasi. Please satisfy my mind by just describing the truth of Radha and Krishna." Right? Because he's telling him, oh, I can't, you know, you're a sannyasi, you know, I'm just a government servant, I'm a shudra, you know, so I can't instruct you in that. So Lord Chaitanya says, hey, please don't try to cheat me, thinking that you're a learned sannyasi. Because just as, you know, we're on the transcendental position, so these things don't apply. They apply in the social structure of work, of maintenance of the body. That's what they're for. right? Or for maintenance of the social system within the ashrams, right? But it's not here. Sri Ramananda Rai was a great devotee of the Lord and lover of God. And although his mind could not be covered by Krishna's illusory energy, and although he could understand the mind of the Lord, which was very strong and intense, Ramananda's mind became a little agitated. Sri Ramananda Rai said, "I am just a dancing puppet, and you pull the strings. Whichever way you make me dance, I will dance. My dear Lord, my tongue is just like a stringed instrument, and you are its player. Therefore, I simply vibrate whatever arises in your mind." Right? So whatever he wants to taste, then it's there. Because the point is it's about the interaction and that. So it's not just you sit there in your mind and everything's going on in your mind and everyone just sits around. This is not tapaloka. You know? It's about the interaction. So there's always that amazement that, like Lord Chaitanya, then, where was it? At Haridas Thakur's house, he found that leaf.
Yeah, Haridas Thakur's house.
There was Haridas Thakur's house, but it was written by Rupa Goswami. And so then, because I think it was given, it was written down, and it was given, and somebody copied it, and I somehow or another ended up at Haridas Thakur's house. Just because, you see in the roof here? Like this. This is very big, but most of them are small. This is very close. So in here, you see where you have the big, big bamboos. Right? You can see easier over there. Then you have those small little fine bamboos, like the size of a finger. So in between that, you could stick something. So if you have things, like a lot of times those hang down, like they have their tools and stuff, and like for cutting grass, they just stick them there. So they're always there. You know, little things like that that are practical things, they just stick them there. So in Haridas Thakur's house on the veranda, that someone stuck it there. Because if you put it down anywhere else, it may get swept up, blown away, someone else will take it. You stick it there, you know it's there. So Lord Chaitanya found that. So what he's amazed is how Rupa Goswami knew what his mind is. But at the same time is, you know, it means that Adbhuta. Because remember, it mentions all the rasas Adbhuta is friendly. And at the same time is that pleasure in being reminded of that and that, and then someone else knows and that comes, all these different flavors are there. So when someone else knows, that gives more taste. So even if it's exactly like what Ramananda Rai is saying, and which technically it is that Lord Chaitanya knows, but still, even though he knows, he wants to hear someone else speak it, because then you know, you're thinking it, then you hear it, you know, then they're relishing that it is there, and then it's someone else, and then that can, you can go in so many directions with it. You know, so it's, that's the thing, it's personal. And so that taste, that personal taste, that's what's important. Then Ramananda Rai, then therefore I simply vibrate whatever arises in your mind. But still, just because it's in his mind, he wants to be heard. You know, like that. Ramananda Rai, you know, just like, why is it prayers? Why are devotees becoming perfect at prayers? They're saying things that are already there. You know, you read all the prayers in the Bhagavatam of all these great personalities. Main points are very similar. The poetics are slightly different, which one they're emphasizing, you know, which ones they bring out, but they're basically very similar. But the point is these glories are so wonderful, and then Krishna hearing them. So when others, it's a personal thing about exchange, right? Ramananda Rai then began to speak on Krishna Tattva. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he said. He is personally the original Godhead, the source of all incarnations and the cause of all causes. There are innumerable Vaikuntha planets as well as innumerable incarnations. In the material world, there are also innumerable universes, and Krishna is the supreme resting place for all of them. The transcendental body of Sri Krishna is eternal and full of bliss and knowledge. He is the son of Nanda Maharaj. He is full of all opulences and potencies, as well as all spiritual mellows. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the supreme controller. He has an eternal, blissful spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, For he is the prime cause of all causes. Footnote 12. This verse is from Brahma Samhita 5.1. In the spiritual realm of Vrindavan, Krishna is the spiritual, ever-fresh Cupid. He is worshipped by the chanting of the Kama Gayatri mantra, with the spiritual seed clean. Right, so we see here is, please satisfy my mind by just describing the truth of Radha and Krishna. And so he starts here. Because you have to know Krishna's position. Then within that, then there's the taste. Well, you see, is the sahajiyas, they skip all this and just want to go right to the pastime. So then they'll consider them basically on the mundane platform because they consider they have Radha Krishna pastimes. Yeah, because if you don't know the position, then how will it go? And this is Lord Chaitanya Ramananda Rai. So this is, of all the conversations, this will be the most elevated. Yes. But you see, immediately it comes right up to that. You know, he doesn't go through the whole Vedanta Sutra first and then come to it. No. You know, he's done. Yeah.
Also, we saw in Bhagavad Sandha that medium-sized form is the source of all other forms.
Yes. Yes. So you want to start. That medium-sized form, he says, yeah, he's known as Govinda. Govinda is his original name. He has unlimited names. So technically, he doesn't have a name. He has unlimited names. So Govinda is the original name. So that's why it's so important. Like our deity is Govinda Dev. He's the central deity. Okay. Srila Prabhupada. Gayantam trayate yasmad gayatri tvam tata smrita. One who chants the Gayatri mantra is gradually delivered from the material clutches. In other words, that which delivers one from material entanglement is called Gayatri. Right? So that's the... Yeah. An explanation of the Gayatri mantra can be found in the Madhya Lila, chapter 21, text 125. Kama Gayatri Mantra Rupa Haya Krishna Swarupa Sharda Chabisha Akshara Tarahoy Se Akshara Chandrahoy Krishna Kare Udoy Tri Jagat Kaila Kama Maya. The Kama Gayatri is just like a Vedic hymn, but it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself, because like, the other ones will take the form of Narayan and like this. There's no difference between the Kama Gayatri and Krishna. Both are composed of 24 and a half transcendental syllables. See Madhya Lila 21, 125 to 29, footnote 13. These verses explain how there are 24 and a half moons that arise in Krishna's form, which coincide... coincide. Yeah. English is so weird. With syllables of the Gayatri mantra. Another place would be koi, and this is koi. Oh well. The mantra depicted in letters is also Krishna, and the mantra arises just like the moon. Due to this, there is a perverted reflection of desire in human society and among all kinds of living entities. Right? In other words, everybody, this mood of personal interaction, is all coming from Krishna. So the idea that anything separate from Krishna is just foolhardy. So that's why the having faith in anything other than Krishna means you're just missing the point. I mean, there's only Krishna. Everything's Krishna. That anything goes on and has that mood and all this is all coming from Krishna. Right? That's how the Rasa Shastra can be there and you can explain all these things because people go through, but they think it's them and it's their enjoyment. When this is Krishna. In the mantra, Krishna is called Kamadeva, Pushpabana, and Ananga. Kamadeva is Madan Mohan, the deity who established our relationship with Krishna. Pushpabana, he who carries an arrow made of flowers, is Govinda, the personality of Godhead who accepts our devotional service. Right? Because the five arrows are the five senses. Right? It means, in other words, serving Krishna with the eyes, the ears, the nose, the skin, the touch, and the tongue. So all the senses are engaged in Krishna's service. That's why I said he's the personality who accepts our devotional service. Madan Mahan is who establishes our relationship. And Ananga is Gopi Janavalava. Fuzzy things off the map. And Ananga is Gopi Janavalabha, who satisfies all the gopis and is the ultimate goal of life. This Kama Gayatri simply does not belong to this material world. When one is advanced in spiritual understanding, he can worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead with his spiritually purified senses and fulfill the desires of the Lord. And so that's the point, that's what the Kama Gayatri is saying. You know, so that's a purport on explaining what it is.
If we take previous one, so the Gopal Gayatri,
it same thing.
Exactly same.
Yeah, but it's in like in a bija form. So that's why it's called the Gopal mantra. It's just like Om. It's also saying has all the elements. You know, that's why it's the Mahavakya, because it indicates the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not Brahman. So the Gopal mantra, it has all the elements, but it's just there. But the Kama Gayatri is the original. After Hare Krishna, it's the original mantra. So you can say a formalized mantra is the Kama is the first. Then from that will come all the, you know, Gopal mantra and all the other Gayatris. So Brahma Gayatri will be the last. And then that's the one that comes into the material world first. Therefore, it's given that reverence. And so then in the past times, then it always, the Vedic is always given more reverence. You know, it's just like Advaitacharya is the eldest, even though he's the avatar. You know, Nityananda is the expansion. Lord Chaitanya is the original. But Nityananda is senior, you know, socially to Lord Chaitanya, and Advaitacharya is the senior to all of them. Right? Because then from him, everything else comes. So that, in that way, he is senior to everybody else, but at the same time as by the pastime, then he's senior also Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. So it just, it works nicely that way. Because then you can always talk about, you know, Krishna can talk about the Supreme Lord. You know, Mother Jashoda can say, by the grace of, you know, Lord Narayana, you know, he protected our son. You know. So all these nice things can be done. So that's the whole point of the pastime. But yes. But it's the same. But you see there's a difference. Is that the Gopal was first. By chanting that, then he became qualified for the Kama. Brahma. Sri Ramananda Rai continued, the very name Krishna means that he attracts even Cupid. He is therefore attractive to everyone, male and female, moving and inert living entities. Indeed, Krishna is known as the all-attractive one. Srila Prabhupada, only after being liberated from material conditioning can one understand Krishna. Right? Because when we're conditioned that everything's dead matter, until we get over that, then we can't understand Krishna. When one can understand Krishna as he is, tattvataha, one actually lives in the spiritual world, although apparently living within the material body. This technical science can be understood when one is actually spiritually advanced. In his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.187, Srila Rupa Goswami says, Iha yasya harer dasye, Karmana manasa gira Nikhilas vapya vastasu jivan muktas sa uchake. When a person in this material world desires only to serve Krishna with love and devotion, he is liberated, even though functioning within this material world. As the Bhagavad Gita confirms, 14.26, Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samapityayatan brahma-bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahma. So that's just the... So one that's the point, is one can be in the spiritual platform in this body. Right? So that's why you see is that, you know, Prabhupada mentions the point, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he's writing documenting the 64 items. Then when it says you should live in the holy place, when he says, you know, a holy place like Vrindavan, Mayapur, or a temple. You know, so if your house is a temple, it's a spiritual place. Or you live in the temple, or like that. So, point is, you know, it's not limited because of the material world. Spiritual is not limited by the material world. So, Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.